From KLCC Media, this is the Oregon Grapevine. I'm Barbara Dellenbach. The Oregon Grapevine highlights fresh-pressed conversations with people who are actively and passionately creating the present and future in which they wish to live. Jacob Hunt is executive director of Thoreau College and Driftless Folk Schools. It's one of a series of micro colleges. Thank you so much for being on the Oregon Grapevine.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you, Barbara.
Let's jump into what is a micro college.
Micro college is probably a term that most people haven't heard, although I would wager that they will if they haven't yet. You know, I guess they are now, but you'll hear it from somewhere else, because I think it's an idea whose time has come. And also it's a word that we are using here at Viroqua, at the Thoreau College in Viroqua, Wisconsin, to describe a phenomenon which is a growing one in our time. A micro college is, as we define it, it's an institution of post-secondary education. So this is education for college-age students that is humanly scaled, place-based, meaning-centered, and with a curriculum that is for the whole person. We are one of a half a dozen programs that could be described in that way in the United States, some of which are 100 years old or older, and some of which have started in the last few years. But there's also a much wider movement with deep roots in Europe and elsewhere in the world. There's micro colleges in Japan. I've spoken to people in Egypt and across Eastern Europe. It's basically small-scaled, very community-centered, hands-on, integrated education for college-age young adults.
There's a lot of angst that comes around college conversations, whether it has to do with whether you want to go there or whether your parents think you should go there or what should I do, or of course, outside of the political realm of other things that are going on around the field of education. What is the appeal, or who might be go there? Who are the student bodies of Thoreau College, certainly? And is that, can you make generalizations about to whom does it appeal to go to these schools?
There's a broad sense in the United States and around the world in general that there's something off about higher education right now. There's perhaps, as you mentioned, political concerns. There's deep concerns about the cost of education and its value in terms of as an economic proposition. But at a deeper level, there's questions about what is it for, right? And also the relationship to evolving technologies. So concretely, the students that we see coming to Thoreau College and these other micro colleges are students who have a sense of they want to really engage deeply with the real and with community. Our student bodies range from 6 to 15 students, right? So this is a handful of people, and many of the programs are of this scale, maybe up to 25 or 30 students. So these are very, very small programs. And so everyone knows each other, so they're not anonymous. And that's certainly a concern in society today, in big institutions, in virtually based education, right? These are all in-person, embodied, face-to-face, not online programs. And I think that's a big draw. We have students who are coming out of this experience of going to middle school, high school, early years of college in the COVID era, where they're doing things all online, feeling very disconnected from one another, and also perhaps feeling very disconnected from the physical world. So these programs, our programs involve farm work, so hands-on kind of homesteading skills, working with animals, with gardens, with carpentry. And many of the programs, including ours, involve wilderness expeditions, so canoe trips, hiking trips. We do camping here in Wisconsin in the winter, so learning to read the land and to know the trees and to watch the stars. So that engagement with the physical, natural world is a big draw. And deep down, these are places at a scale and of an orientation where you can talk about the big questions about why are we here? What's the direction of my life? How should we relate to the major changes and crises and issues of our time in a community of people you get to know well, and your voice can be heard, and you can explore.
I've mentioned before the kind of it's a little snide, but I don't mean it that way. a student comes home and says to mom, I'm going to study philosophy. And they're going, what are you possibly going to do with a philosophy degree? Now, obviously, there are many things you can do and are done with a philosophy degree. But a student comes home and says, I want to go to this micro college, Thoreau College or Deep Springs or some other or Gutenberg, some and study this very seemingly esoteric thing. How do you convince the parent or convince the student and their family to have these conversations and say, no, you don't understand. It really does have this value.
Well, I think this is something that was that gets easier and easier to make every year, actually. First of all, so our programs can fit in the broad category of a gap program, although we don't use that language quite as much, meaning a time of transition. And really, education, especially post-secondary education, you come out of high school, you're entering adulthood. This is a period of initiation, of passage to a new phase of life. The both anecdotal and sort of quantitative research has been done shows this is incredibly valuable. Just take a pause, to take a time to really take stock of who you are, where the world is, and where you want to go. And this is now highly recognized by colleges, including the most selective and difficult to get in colleges. This colleges that, you know, the Ivy League schools, for example, that have the money to do it actually will sponsor and fund their students to take a gap year because they see the data and people come back after an experience. They're more likely to graduate in 4 years. They're more likely to be engaged. They're more their grades will be higher. So if all you're concerned about is like conventional success, this is still a really good idea. I think this is especially true at our moment because of the rapid change that is happening in our economy and in our culture, because it is very difficult to know what the world will look like in 4 years or 5 years or, you know, 10 years, right? And it is a time to really get centered in yourself. And the types of things you can learn in these programs are those formative qualities, self-knowledge, communication skills among a small group of people working through conflicts, really hands-on practical problem solving and observation. We hear, you know, that in the era of artificial intelligence and other kind of digital technologies, this is a time that really that rewards philosophy, actually, right? Thinking about what is consciousness, what is thinking, actually, also ethical reasoning and senses that we have these powerful tools. What will we do with them? Those we need philosophers more than ever, actually. And we also need people who can do things with their hands, right? These are also some of the most needed skills. People who, you know, when we do students who come here, they learn how to grow food, they learn how to work with power tools. We work how to change the oil in cars, you know, how to look at a physical problem and work through it, work with a group of people to solve it. And so I think across a broad range, this is an exceptionally good answer to this precise moment that will set a person up to be successful in whatever they choose to do. And our students, we see them doing all kinds of things. We have students who are running small businesses. We have students I just met a recent student who's now traveling the country shearing sheep and trimming hooves on pigs. We have students at Harvard. We have students at Oberlin College. We have students who are you know, working at computers. They're doing everything. And I think that the baseline is what's set up by a program like ours.
I need to say I love some philosophers, so I don't want to.
I understand.
I don't want to come off here as having trashed philosophy. I was just using that as the example. Is there kind of a coalition or a consortium or conversation between different microcolleges, an organization of microcolleges, if you will?
Yeah, now that's especially exciting for me. Something I've been able to participate in several levels. As I mentioned, this term microcollege, I would say, is an emergent one. It's something that I'm really trying to get out there. And so I really appreciate this opportunity to talk with your audience about that. And people who are excited about this idea in general can also check out my podcast, which is called Microcollege, in which I've interviewed a lot of people who are thinking about this, people who've started or lead or teach at programs like this, students at programs like ours, people who've written books about it. So it is a broad and growing movement. There are some emergent coalitions and organizations. The primary one I'd mention right away is something called the Springboard Foundation, which is a Massachusetts-based foundation, which is supporting networking and kind of advising people who are wanting to start micro colleges. It's also doing research, comparative and longitudinal research about outcomes. They've composed a couple of micro white papers talking about the philosophy and pedagogy. And they're also doing some grant writing and some fundraising, which have been very supportive to our program and others. So there's a good, nice list of about five or six programs that they are directly working with that are could be fit into this category. Part of our inspiration, an important one, comes from Deep Springs College, which is has been around since 1917. This is a very selective and very venerable micro college with about 26 students in Eastern California. And so that's where I went to school. And there's a growing organization of about six or so Deep Springs inspired micro colleges all around the country, including in Alaska and Massachusetts and here in Wisconsin. So this is a group that meets now annually. And then some of your audience will know about the folk school movement, particularly the original Danish folk high school model, which is very well established, going back to the 1800s in Denmark, Sweden, Norway, Finland, and then elsewhere in the world. And these are very similar to micro colleges. And this is a now an a movement which is getting organized on a global level beyond Scandinavia. And we are also participating in that. There was a meetup in Denmark last summer, and there'll be another one next year in the UK. And there are educators who are communicating and writing books and articles about this. So this is a multidimensional model that we're able to participate in several ways.
There's a lot of conversations about critical thinking, and that high school kids come out of high school and they don't really know what that is because they're so involved in, and teachers are so involved in getting them to go through tests. And so it's an absolute, this is your choice. You can either have fact-based education, so to speak, where you're answering questions, or you can have a more general understanding of how you make decisions about critical thinking and longer conversations, but those can be complicated, especially in a public school setting. So how do you address that? You have kids, maybe it's changing, maybe it's not, but I'm assuming a lot of the people who are coming to you might not have those skills, and do they want them?
We've been 25 years now or so in this era of the really intense sort of no child left behind style, intensive standardized testing, reinforced several times by the federal government and by the states in ways that I think are disastrous, right? Completely. And now, especially that we have these technologies that can just answer all the questions for us, it's like that is exactly the skill you don't need anymore, precisely. And what you need is the capacity to tackle things that no one knows the answer to, that are complex, which are ambiguous, which require judgment and require nuance, right? And those are exactly the things that are not tested by multiple choice test. And yeah, so I think the ways that we address this, and that is, I think, really core to what we do. And I think we all need to be freshened up on that. And anyone who's come through mainstream education in the last 25 years will need this as well. We create real world situations in which there are conscious, living, engaged other people and groups of people. There are animals and plants and the weather. There are, aspects of the physical built environment that fall apart and break and need to be kind of be adjusted. And also, I would add to that the arts, right? The creative arts. If you are right now, we are here at Thoreau College. One of our kind of side projects is we have a Shakespeare festival. When you stage a play, whether it's Shakespeare or it's improv or it's something that you've written together, you are dealing in multiple levels with qualitative elements, with social dynamics, with the weather. This is an outside Shakespeare festival. If you're making a sculpture and you're dealing with wood or with clay or with stone, if you're working with plant materials, as we often do here to make baskets or to work with fiber from sheep, right? These are things which don't have one answer. They require complex thinking. They require comfort with ambiguity. Often, if you're working with people, comfort with conflict and working through differences of opinion and perspective. And I think the intensive micro college, hands-on, socially rooted, close relationships that we have in a micro college are really ideal for that kind of thing, and much harder to do in larger institutions or ones that are more rigidly structured to testing or to other kind of those measures.
There's a school in Eugene that I know you're familiar with and some of the listeners are familiar with, which is Gutenberg College, which in some definitions could certainly be called a micro college. Different from what you're talking about in terms of some of the models that have to do with outdoor work and hands-on work and changing the oil of cars and dealing with those kinds of things, because Gutenberg, and maybe there are some others, is specifically dealing with kind of great books and biblically related thinking. Are there other kind of micro colleges that also pick a more limited subject matter, if you will, but still are using this model of micro colleges to emphasize critical thinking and emphasize community understanding in a smaller group?
Well, I would say, first of all, what we are doing at Thoreau College, and certainly what is happening at Deep Springs and some of these Deep Springs inspired institutions, really, like the great books model is an important part of our lineage, which is to say the way that, even though we are not a sectarian institution, we're not specifically Christian or affiliated with a particular religion or movement like that, the impulse to ground yourself both in the natural world and in cultural lineage of, and the great books are a great way to do that. Is an important part of what we're doing. Cultural literacy, engagement with the great thinkers and the great kind of conversations that are happening. I listened to your conversation with the gentleman from Gutenberg College, and I recognize a lot of the impulse there. And certainly the model of academics that we do here is essentially great book seminar. Small group of people who having read a primary text, talking about it, really treating that book as a primary source of experience, a phenomenon that we are seeking in an appreciative, open kind of way to understand and as a group of students of the world. And I would add to that, what we add is that we are also engaging the natural world in that same way, right? When you stand in front of a landscape, in front of an animal, of the stars, and you can engage it in a similar, primary source kind of based experience, based on conversation, based on, I think, real reverence for the phenomenon, whether it is a book, an idea, a work of art, or some aspect of the natural world. I would say that there's a real a lot of alignment there, and I think that that our vision includes a broader sense of what education should include. Not just books, but also the natural world and hands-on experience and social life. The governance of the school is a part of our curriculum as well. Maybe I just can share an example of another example in Japan, and we've had a couple of students who've come through this program. It's called Kotowari. It's a kind of an intensive couple weeks in the summertime. And some of these programs are shorter than a year, a semester, or 2 years. The Kotowari program says we're inspired by the meditative traditions of Asia, of the East, and the liberal arts traditions of the West. And so they're doing contemplative practices, meditation, and they're also reading works of philosophy and literature. And they're doing it in a context where they're also engaging with agriculture and with the farm and with the in the context of the natural world. So, and I think that's, I think the big picture, I get really excited about this idea of the microcollege movement. I think the opportunities for a huge variety and diversity of manifestations of this are really great. And so I appreciated the highlight of Gutenberg. And there is a whole broad micro college scale, Christian, Catholic, and other sort of religious traditions that are at this scale. And many of them are incorporating things beyond the books too. There are ones that are engaged with carpentry and with building trades and things like that.
Let's go to the folk school tradition for a minute and what you're also doing there. I know the one Tarweed, which is here in Oregon, is more of a, it's a school, but it's not exactly a place that you go for a long period of time. You go because you want to learn about specific basketry or you want to learn about how to make a spoon or some other kind of wood carving, etc. But there are, of course, folk schools where you spend more time. Now, how does that work in terms, is it a year-long program? Is it a community-based situation? What is kind of the overview of that folk school?
I think that's a really unique thing that we are doing here specifically. And I should set the scene for your listeners who don't know the region. We are located in Viroqua, Wisconsin, which is in the southwest corner of the state of Wisconsin, about 2 hours west of Madison, and about a 20 minutes away from the Mississippi River. And this is a hill country called the Driftless Region. It's unglaciated, so the whole of Midwest was bulldozed flat by the glaciers several times, except for this little island of the southwest corner of Wisconsin and neighboring areas of Iowa and Minnesota and Illinois, which is distinctive in its geography and also therefore distinctive in its agriculture and its culture and its biodiversity. And so folk schools are rooted in place. They are expressions of the landscape and of the culture of those places. In our place here is the Driftless Region. So the Driftless Folk School is part of the same nonprofit as Thoreau College, and there's a lot of overlap between the activities. We would say Thoreau College is semester or year-long programs for college students, full-time residential immersive experiences, including academic elements as well as craft and farm labor and expeditions. The Driftless Folk School is, I think, pretty similar to what you described with Tarweed. It is, these are usually 1 or 2 day long workshop-based classes for adults of all ages. We're also developing a larger set of opportunities for kids, children's classes, or family classes. There's also a set of events, barn dances. We have a spoon carving event that happens every year. But the Driftless Folk School brings together, yeah, people of different walks of life from the whole region who want to learn something hands-on, usually. Foraging, spoon carving, basketry, making cheese, making soap, timber framing. I do my contribution to it is a chicken butchering class. So a lot of things are kind of how to feed yourself, how to sustain yourself, green energy, solar panels, building skills, things like that. So we have an amazing pool of local and regional instructors who come in on the weekends and teach these classes. And again, they're anywhere from 4 hours to 2 days long. And so those are Saturday and Sunday usually. That means that the Thoreau College students actually can elect, they can choose to do those classes as a supplement or in addition to their things that we're doing with them during the week. And we also bring a lot of those folk school instructors in to as core parts of the Thoreau College curriculum. So we've built in on that interplay. There's an intergenerational component, so you have people of different ages learning together. In general, otherwise the folk school classes here and around the country don't have a lot of people in their teens and 20s. So you have a lot of like mixing and that mentorship that happens there. And it also, yeah, we were able to support and really cultivate these people who know these amazing skills and have practiced them to a high level. And you know, we've got a couple of people who basically make their living by doing these classes between teaching the folk school and the Thoreau College classes. And that's a real asset. It builds up the resilience of the local community. We're bringing in people from the big cities of the region, from Chicago and the Twin Cities, who come and bring dollars into the support the rural community here, and just yeah, and build a really rich local culture.
In your experience of the history, as it were, not a long, well, there's Deep Springs is a long history, but the history as it's growing, is the demographic of the student body, both at Thoreau and other places, changing?
These are very difficult to compare. Deep Springs, people could are curious about this, really should, yeah, just do a Google search and you'll see probably most recently the New York Times, which just had an article about Deep Springs a couple weeks ago in the opinion page. It has been featured in some way any in the last 30 years by every major media outlet, from 60 Minutes to the Times of London to the Wall Street Journal to et cetera, et cetera. And so that is a it has a known place in academia. The students go, they spend 2 years there on full scholarship. They generally transfer on from that full credit to selective schools of all sorts around the world. So, and they have 800 or so applicants a year for about 15 positions. So that's a distinctive demographic, right? Thoreau College and the other newer schools are not at all in that role, and I think have in that kind of status, and that's good. I think there should be a lot more opportunities for this type of education, and every different place expresses this differently. Here in Wisconsin, we are embedded in this dynamic little town. We do a lot of raising of our own produce, and we have an orchard and vineyards and flock of sheep and pigs and chickens. We are engaged with a particular local environment. There are other Deep Springs inspired schools up in Alaska that have really made rural and native Alaskans a key part of their demographic as well as part of their curriculum. So they're fishing for herring, and they're learning a lot. They're learning indigenous languages there in Southeast Alaska at the Outer Coast College, for example. They're meeting different audiences. And here in the Midwest, we are one of the very few, or maybe the only kind of gap year program, and certainly a micro college program in this region at this point, although there are more kind of being explored that we are helping to get started. In general, gap year programs, kind of unusual educational programs like this, have tended to tend towards people with income, with higher educated parents, had some opportunity to look outside the box, some security to do that. But we are seeing that our students are not all drawn from that mold. We have, people, a lot of economic diversity in our pools. We've had students from other countries. We've had students from all over the United States. And so, I would say that's a mission, is to expand the pool of people who are accessing this and can see themselves in a place like Thoreau College.
And I know that Deep Springs, at least I believe that Deep Springs, it's a 2-year degree that is then transferable. It's as if you've gone to college for a couple of years and you have some college credits. Is that something that is becoming true? If it's a gap year program, that isn't necessarily true. Is that starting to happen that Thoreau and other places are saying, no, actually, here is some college credit and you can be here and carry that forward? Or is it not yet there?
So Thoreau College, you can come for we have our basic program is a semester program, a fall or a spring semester. And yes, you can get for each semester, you can get 15 transferable college credits, so basically the full semester. This is through a partnership with Prescott College in Arizona, which is a really innovative pioneer alternative college down in Prescott, Arizona. Students can come here, they can stay for 2 semesters, and so effectively getting a full year worth of college, and we've had students do that. We also have a summer program that is has in mind primarily students who are current students at other colleges, called our Driftless Field School 5-week program, and so that you also can get 4 college credits for that program. And so, yeah, those are transferable credits from an accredited 4-year school that can be applied to a bachelor's degree. And that is true generally across these micro colleges in this country. And a lot of things also that are, you could describe as gap year programs, also have some credit relationship like this. So, it is something that when people hear the word gap year, you shouldn't definitely not automatically think that there's no, this is part of your college trajectory. We really like to think of what we're doing as not a gap, but as like, this is part of an education, a part of a life. And we see more and more students who are thinking of it in that way. They'll maybe do multiple micro college type programs. They might then kind of do something like go and work on organic farms, travel the world. I just was talking of the recent alum who set up a year for herself doing au pair work in France. And so people are creating really, a wide range of resources to craft individualized educational experiences.
Really, more to enhance what you're then going to go on and continue to do to give you a little more deeper understanding. Let me ask you this: what inspires you to continue to do this work? And how did maybe how you got to Deep Springs, but what has started you on this path and why do you continue to do it?
This is, I have a strong sense of vocation around this. I grew up in this here in rural southwestern Wisconsin in the Driftless region, in an environment of people who were thinking about education, but also thinking more deeply about the good life, right? How shall we live? These basic philosophical questions. Here, we are in a region that is really rich in sustainable agriculture. So this is the home base of the Organic Valley Farm Co-op. So dairy farmers and produce growers who are thinking about how to steward the land, and also how to do it in a way that builds community and builds relationship and builds resilience and wealth in rural communities. And so I grew up around really visionary social entrepreneurs and people who had a lot of agency in building their own life. So I think I've always had a sense of this is what one of the outcomes and purposes of education. And I knew early on that I was had a vocation as a teacher, and I just love working with young people, and especially working with young adults, people, let's say 17 to 25 year olds who I can get to know in a really like in-depth long-term way. And so if you go, the program here involves, we start every semester with a week-long canoe trip or a camping trip that I participate in, and we have meals, we have lunch together every single day. We have a couple of meetings a week where we're making decisions, we're talking about big ideas and philosophy in class, we're working in the garden. These are ways to really go deep in relationship. And in that environment, you go into those questions that you don't in a like narrowly transactional kind of way. what's on the test, what's the grade going to be, and then you don't interact again. So these are mentorship relationships. They are collaborative, co-creation relationships. They're also friendships that are very valuable to me. And I feel really, I'm excited every day. Right now we're kind of between programs, and I really miss the students. Like and that ongoing relationship with the students who, especially those who find a place like this and are find their way to be here, they are just golden and really, really delightful.
Thank you so much, Jacob Hunt, to explaining a little bit about microcolleges and for the work you do and being on the Oregon Grapevine. I'm grateful and a little more educated. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to KLCC Media's The Oregon Grapevine, fresh pressed conversations with people who are actively and passionately creating the present and future in which they wish to live.